In this week's episode, we're going to be discussing two, not one, but two new releases from the Titans of Linux.
Two?
Two. You've got Ubuntu and Fedora.
So is it Ubuntu as in the number two? Because that's why there's two.
Ubuntu.
And Fedora.
Yeah.
And that's Fedora 40 and Ubuntu 2404 LTS.
It's happening.
Noble Numbat.
This episode, Michael, we're going to cover both. And we're going to talk about which distro knocked it out of the park. And we're going to give you highlights on both of these. So if you're like, I don't know which one to choose, listen to the episode and you'll know by the end.
That's right. This is a versus, people.
That's versus. It. The Battle of the Titans. Welcome to episode number 369, part A of Destination Linux. That's not going to make sense to a lot of you, the part A. But the reason I'm doing that is because we have another episode that was technically 369. And you're going to hear me say 369 in that episode too. So we're calling this one part A. And this one will be part, the other one will be part B. Don't worry about it. Welcome to your favorite video podcast. My name is Ryan.
I don't even think you were in that episode. That was technically part B. So, that was the interview thing. I don't know if you're even in.
I missed.
No.
Yeah. So you didn't say 60.
But people don't know who's talking right now because you haven't said your name.
Oh, my name is Michael, and I think I said it in the show. So yeah, you're still part A is a good point. Good point there.
Yeah, very good point. And I'm Jill.
Now let's get this show on the road toward Destination Linux. Our community feedback this week comes from Keith, and Keith has this to say. Greetings, DL team. I will retire soon after 28 years in the Army. In 2017, I decided it was time to start looking at post-retirement careers and knew my body would not stay tactical forever. So I submitted a request to change my primary job in the Army to information technology specialist. At the time, I knew very little about computers. The basic IT specialist course gave me a tremendous amount of knowledge and passion for computers. In order to keep learning, I started work on a bachelor's degree in networking and cybersecurity, wanted to build a home lab, but the price of Windows Server was cost prohibitive, to say the least. Then I took a course on Linux administration and learned about the vast amount of distributions and applications that were available free of charge. Linux gave me the tools to learn, and podcasts like Destination Linux provided me the knowledge to use the tools. After nearly three decades in the Army that included four deployments, I'm currently in an internship as a DevOps engineer that will become a paid position as soon as I retire. There is no way I would have developed the skills for this new career without the people who gave their own time to develop the Linux ecosystem and folks like Jill, Michael, and Ryan. Alphabetical order, so no one thinks I have a favorite.
Except Jill was first, so we know.
Yeah, we know. To help me learn how to use the software available to me, as my skills grow in the DevOps world, I hope to find a way to contribute back to Linux. Thank you so much for your show. Know that it can and does have positive real-world impacts on your listeners, Linux contributors, and Destination Linux, because soldiers need heroes too. Thanks, Keith.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. So
That is just so one of honored. The most incredible emails I think we've ever received.
It's actually made me speechless, which is not, that does not happen very often.
That literally never happens. So first, I want to give a huge and heartfelt thank you for your service and everything you've done for the country. It's an honor to have you listen to this show. And as someone who's in the midst of a career change themselves, this was very inspirational to me on many levels. I'm currently juggling college, full-time job, podcasting, family, all of this stuff. And it's not easy, but you have to make big moves to see change. And I'm so proud of you. And thank you so much for listening to our show. And I'm so happy it gave you any inspiration at all to continue on this journey that you have. And like you, I'm going into cybersecurity because it's something I'm very passionate about. So this is just really awesome. And I'm also at the point where there's like a movie. What was it called, Michael? We were talking about this. Like, was it Going Back to College, where it's like a
guy going
back to
college?
Oh, Back to School. That's a classic movie.
That's what I feel like now.
Rodney Dangerfield.
In my 40s, going back to college again. I'm like, hey, college kids, what's up?
Hello, fellow kids.
Right.
Are you going to do the triple Lindy for us?
Yeah, there you go. And so,
the best part about this reference, Ryan, is that we are making a reference to a completely different movie, different thing. And then Jill's reference is actually from Back to School.
Like, yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah, we were doing, I don't even know what we were making. The whole Fellow Kids is not from Back to School. It's from something else. Yeah. I don't remember what it is. But and I actually had no reference because I haven't seen the Back to School movie in so long. And then Jill said that. I was like, oh, right. That actually is from that movie.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, I need to watch it again. That was a good movie. I remember it being good. It's been forever.
Yeah. I mean, Rodney Dangerfield is in it, so it's automatically good, right?
Yeah.
But this is such an amazing piece of feedback. I mean, it's very humbling to have people, you know, send a message in and saying that they appreciate our stuff, you know, because we feel sometimes that we're just talking out into the ether, and to get the feedback is really awesome. To get feedback like that is just, I mean, it's incredible. So thank you very much for listening, and I'm glad that we could help you in your journey. There is one part in your feedback that you said something that I'm glad I didn't say it at the time, because it would have been like a little bit not appropriate at the timing, but now I can totally say it, you know. Because it said I knew very little about computers, and I was going to say, "Oh, you mean Ryan? Okay, great." Now it's okay.
Dare you?
Because we're past the.
Dare you? We're past actually the thing I take issue with in the email. I mean, I love the email, but there's one part I do take issue with. It's when he said, "My body would not stay tactical forever." Keith, I'll whoop any 20-year-old in the gym, and still to this day can, as long as it's not a longevity or endurance thing. So
I'm pretty sure he was referring to endurance.
Keith, the tactical in us,
you know,
it's just for a very short timer now. We just can't keep the tactical up for.
Yeah, you have the skill, just for only about like 20% the time.
I could outlive any of the college kids in my gym, bar none. But if it's an endurance race, that's a different story. Or how many reps we could do with that weight. That's a different story. So, Keith, we still have it. I'm just saying, we still have it for now anyway.
And someday I might have it.
Yeah. Michael's still working on getting it. I'm still working on it.
Oh, Keith, I was just so humbled and honored when I first read your beautiful words. I even messaged Michael and Ryan and said, oh my gosh, that's one of the best community feedback emails we've ever had. And, you know, thank you for watching and writing in. And thank you again for your service, your sacrifice, and your time. I can't even imagine the stories you have. It's got to be incredible. And I'm sure you have saved people's lives as well. That's, you know, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And congratulations on your upcoming DevOps position. Please write us back and give us an update on your Linux journey and your new job. We'd love to hear about it.
I hope we get to meet Keith in person one day.
That would be awesome.
Cool. Yeah.
Like if you could come to Scale or some other conference we're going to, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Especially Scale. That way, Jill, you can meet Jill. And I mean, obviously, you have Jill first. That means your favorite.
He said it was alphabetical, Michael, which
I missed that part. I just assumed.
I appreciate.
Yeah, but that'd be awesome if you could come to Scale someday. And also, he didn't say exactly what he did in the service and in military, but I just thought of this dad joke. He's going from Spec Ops to DevOps.
Yeah.
Oh,
that would be a good shirt for Spec Ops to DevOps. That would be an awesome t-shirt.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Man. You know, we have a lot of people that listen to us that are in the military, including one of our other podcasters, right, on our fellow network is part of the military. I think the Spec Ops, the DevOps shirt, maybe something we put in the store, Michael. And we probably.
I mean, I was just making it as a dad joke, but actually, now that you mentioned it is kind of cool. So,
people in the service listen to the show. So, it'd be a good one there. Oh, awesome. If you want to send in feedback that you have, you can do so by going to destinationlinux.net/comments and send in your feedback. Let us know about your career changes. Let us know about things going on in the Linux world or ecosystem, awesome software you find. Anything like that is welcome, and you can help be a part of the show and make this show happen. And we're so glad that this show has such a positive impact on so many people. It's amazing.
When you go through an airport security, there's one line where you go through to check the TSA, getting your ID checking. And then there's the other line where a machine scans your bag. And then if you're lucky, that's all the lines you have. But sometimes there's a few more, but the same thing happens in enterprise security too. And by the same thing, I mean, there's multiple levels of checks, not for passengers and luggage, but for end users and their devices.
And wow, comparing this to an airport is interesting because being in corporate America for so many years, TSA is extraordinarily frustrating, probably the worst part of travel. And corporate security is also the worst part about being a corporation. So I see how those two connect there perfectly.
And also it might connect a little level, but at the point where, you know, the people who are the TSA agents are dealing with the stuff that's very frustrating because they're dealing with thousands of people who are doing it wrong and not prepared for certain things at certain times. And then you have the security team who are dealing with people who don't know how to use their devices sometimes. And, you know, wide variety of things. But, you know, these days, most companies are good at the first part of checking user identity. They have some kind of solution there. But user devices, well, that isn't always the case. Because sometimes they could just roll right through the authentication process without getting inspected at all. Like sometimes your bags might not get inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. That means an employee can log in from a laptop that has its firewall turned off and hasn't been updated in 6 months. Like Ryan takes forever to update stuff.
Wait, what? You know? I update all the time. What are you talking about?
Oh, that was me.
That's you.
Right. Yeah, okay. That's Michael AI.
You shouldn't be trusted. That's the problem. All these other people, they're
no,
like
No. I update the stuff that I need to connect to like stuff like this. Just, yeah, you know.
They need, all the corporations need to kick Michael off their network immediately because he's untrusted and unauthenticated.
This system is up to date. I just want to verify that's no longer a problem.
Think about all the apps and things people put on their personal devices. And so many businesses,
oh yeah,
they require you to utilize your personal device as kind of your 2FA and also your security to get into your VPN for your business. And on top of that, they've got TikTok and Facebook and any other random scanning apps.
Or just weird random apps they download that have like tons of ads or, you know, some kind of coupon app or something, you know?
Yeah. And then these apps request permissions, like give me permission to your network. Give me permission to search your network stuff. Give me permission. And the corporations.
Give me permission to your location for some reason.
Yeah, and the corporations are all, their data is going to get zapped up in that app just like anybody else's if there's nothing to stop it.
But luckily, there is something to stop it, and that's called Collide, because Collide solves the device trust problem. They ensure that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux Fleet, contractor devices, and the BYOD, or bring your own device stuff like phones and laptops in your company. So you can have it. And the best part about Collide is that if they find an issue, you don't have to tell the person to contact security team. They can actually explain to them what they need to do to fix the authentication problem, which is fantastic because it saves your team time for working on everybody's device. And it also makes it possible for if someone hits a hiccup, like a roadblock, they can get past it, which is very important. So visit destinationlinux.net/collide to watch a demo and to see how it works. That's destinationlinux.net/KOLIDE.
So the battle of the Titans is about to begin, and in the left corner, wearing the blue trunks, is Fedora.
And that's Fedora 40. Welcome to the Battle Dome.
Yes. How much do you think Fedora would weigh? You know, because they always do the weight and height. If Fedora was a person, how much would Fedora weigh and how tall would they be?
How could we possibly pick? Like, where are you going with that?
They have a 40-inch reach because it's Fedora 40.
They're actually pretty short, really.
They're 40. Not if they're 5'1", Michael.
That means their arms are short like a raptor, like a velociraptor or like a tight T-Rex.
40-inch reach.
Because 5 foot is 60-inch, you know? I just imagine.
Sorry,
like,
Fedora. Oh. We'll take that. Let's get rid of the image there, Fedora, and we'll get back. We'll come back to you on that one.
I mean, Ubuntu at 2404 would be even smaller because it's 24.4.
inch reach in this battle. Oh, man. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, what so happened? This particular start of the Battle Dome does not make sense, and you're welcome, people.
Yeah. Well, maybe maybe if they're miniature, they're like 12 inches. You know,
oh, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. It's like Rock'em Sock'em Robots type of stuff. That's right, what you're saying. Right, okay. Right.
Yeah.
I got you.
All right. So in the blue shorts, we have Fedora celebrating the release of Fedora Workstation 40.
Now we have to decide what do is it the Ubuntu purple or the Ubuntu orange that they're wearing? What?
So they got to be orange.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got Ubuntu celebrating their 10th LTS release of Ubuntu 24.04,
which is Noble awesome.
Numbat in the right corner with their orange shorts. And yep. They're only 24 years old. They already got an advantage. Or no, it's 24-inch reach. And
24-inch reach, yes. So the reach, the actual advantage goes to Fedora with the reach and height, apparently. And we're not sure how long Ubuntu has been working on the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But we do know that Fedora has had a lot of work on their Muay Thai. So there's a, you know, there's a nice balance. But it depends on... It's going to be a
good fight.
Yeah.
It's a good fight.
We'll see what happens when we get into the Battle Dome.
So both of these distros have some great enhancements. They're already solid. I mean, let's be honest. Fedora 39, solid.
Right? Oh, yeah, for sure.
Prior Ubuntu, absolutely. Solid. So, you know, we're just looking for what enhancements have been made on top of an already solid, fantastic distros here. So Fedora Workstation 40, you get GNOME 46. And GNOME 46 has lots of, we've talked about.
Lots of stuff.
Lots of enhancements.
I think we covered GNOME when it came out, GNOME 46 came out. So yeah. You can go back and check out the full depths of everything. But GNOME 46 has a lot of cool stuff, like some updates to the notification system, updates to the settings app, accessibility, which is super important. All of that stuff is really cool. And just real quick, though, the notifications is like nice grouping. And I just really like the fact that it's a clean experience. So yes. I just wanted to bring that back up because it's so nice. But also, we have the update to Fedora KDE being Plasma 6, which means that's much more important than the GNOME 46 update because that's the KDE part of it. And clearly, the best desktop environment ever be created was the Plasma.
In Michael's
opinion. I'm not biased in any way. Just because I've been using it for 10 years does not mean that I'm biased. It's just the best.
We know where Michael's putting
for
his...
For me.
Yeah, for you. So in addition see, to the, all
that's
the
like the allegedly part where you get like you say everything you want to say and then they're like for me.
There you go. So in addition to all the upgrades thanks to GNOME, Fedora added IPv4 address conflict detection so you won't get conflicts as you're connecting to various networks there, or at least you get a detection to let you know.
Wait, you're saying that Fedora is doing conflict resolution but we're putting them in the Battle Dome? That seems like a contradiction right there.
We're forcing them to fight even though they don't want to and they're probably all friends.
They're actually probably all friends and they'll be like, yeah.
Exactly. There's lots of performance improvements to the point that some are actually saying and reading the comments of people who are testing this that it's the most responsive distro they've ever tried. And GNOME and Fedora both focused on performance in their releases. So that's really cool to see. And apparently all that work there is showing. They've got the integration of PyTorch directly in the software repository.
That's very cool.
Which is very important for those wanting to play with AI and Python and those things.
Local
They're also
AI.
Making a marketing change. Michael, you're going to argue with me on this, but I heard that the marketing change, right, is that they're no longer going to be calling their distros immutable distros, but instead calling them atomic. And it's just apparently just a marketing change.
For so technically, you're right and wrong. So, okay. I mean, well done.
Isn't that how I'm always, aren't I always right
usually, and wrong? Yeah, usually. If every time you say something, you're always like, well, actually, Ryan. But really, they don't necessarily call them immutable. In their blog post, they actually put the word immutable in quotes. And I don't know what that means because they didn't specify in the blog post what that meant. They just said it's not technically immutable. Like, okay, in the future, I would request that you would explain what you mean by that. But they are changing the marketing thing of saying that they're using the atomic part. But the thing that they're doing is really renaming the distributions that are using the atomic system. So we have, I don't remember exactly the names of the other ones, but there's Silverblue, Kinoite, Onyx, and something else. I don't remember. Basically, it's named after various minerals And in the case of kinoite, it's a blue mineral, so that's KDE. And then silver blue is, well, I don't know. So I guess gnome's also blue. Anyway, so the thing is, I don't like this change solely because of the kinoite and the silver blue are keeping their name. So it's Fedora Sway Atomic and Fedora Budgie Atomic, and then still Fedora Silver Blue and Fedora Kinoite. Hmm. If you're going to do it, you might as well just do the all of them because it's a lot more clear that way. And it's kind of, it just seems like an unnecessary confusion. That's the only thing I would say, like a critique there. Overall,
though, Immutable makes more sense to me than atomic. When I think of atomic, I think of the bomb. I think of the latest Fallout.
Thank you so much for calling me the bomb.
The latest Fallout series on Amazon, which is amazing, by the way. I think about that to check out. When I think about Immutable, on the other hand, I think about the marketing opportunity to bring in Wolverine and Deadpool as a marketing characters for an Immutable OS, you know, because they can't die. They're immutable, invulnerable, immortal. Immutable.
I had no idea where you were going with this.
Yeah.
And then you get to the, you can't die. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess the immutable whole idea is like, it's not going to break as easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Wolverine's got the adamantium skeleton. He's immutable.
Immutable. That's not what that means.
I just want Linux to get in partnership.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Imagine having Deadpool talk about the latest Fedora release, you know?
That would be amazing because, right. I mean, they probably shouldn't do that because of, like, you have no idea what it's going to be said. So it's probably not the best thing. But Wolverine, maybe. Yeah, who knows?
Did you see the Wolverine and Deadpool trailer, by the way?
Of course I did. Yeah. As soon as it was announced, of course I did. I even watched the whole, let's break down and see every little speck of Easter eggs that they're going to cover and blah, blah.
So good.
Yeah.
Very excited about that.
So excited.
Okay. So back to the immutable Fedora here.
Oh, that's what we're talking about.
We're just giving them marketing ideas. That's all. So I'm not a big fan of Atomic. I just don't think it conjures the same.
So immutable. To be fair, I don't think immutable does either because no one's going to look at that word and instantly know what it means. I didn't even know the word existed until they started talking about it in the distros and stuff. So, but I agree that the Atomic thing, it doesn't really convey it either. But the concept of Atomic is more of like, that term is around. It's been around for a while, so it applies to transactional updates and that sort of stuff. So I get why they used it, but it's not the greatest way of describing it.
Yeah.
Atomic
sounds cool. I mean, yeah. It's like, I got an atomic distro. Like, cool.
Yeah, it does sound.
That also means are you saying that it's going to explode on you? Like, yeah. What do you mean by that? So
anyway, that's what they decided and that's their right. So yeah, cool
on
that.
It's not bad. It's just like, you know, if you're going to do it, you might as well rename all of them is what I'm saying.
They've got bootable IoT containers as a thing added to this, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
And it comes with Linux kernel 6.8, Mesa 24.0.5, and Wayland out of the box for the KDE edition. So,
well, to be more specific, it is Wayland out of the box. It's also Wayland only. So that's depending on your situation of your hardware or what you need from it.
Do you have NVIDIA is the big question.
Basically, if you have NVIDIA. Now, there are really good things happening on the NVIDIA side of Wayland because of the explicit sync stuff that we talked about before. This is awesome that that is happening because in theory, all of the nonsense that NVIDIA users have been dealing with Wayland are going away because NVIDIA is finally actually going to participate in the support of Wayland.
NVIDIA.
Okay, technically speaking, they already started a while ago, but they did spend like 2 or 3 years fighting against it, and that's why it's now finally happening. So good job, NVIDIA.
Because of me, they saw the fact that I have the green background, thought I was obsessed with NVIDIA, and have decided to participate in the Linux community.
I'm going to completely agree with that for no reason at all.
Yeah.
Good. Well, you know, just recently, in fact, this in the last few days, GNOME 46.1 just dropped, which has explicit sync support to support NVIDIA GPUs on Wayland.
Nice.
Hopefully the updates go into the distros that we're talking about, because that would be very important. Although there is a little bit of an issue of like how much can they update, because, you know, like the only downside of, in my opinion, of the stable release system is that if the thing that you really, really want comes after they've already frozen it in time, then it kind of makes it an issue. Like, do we wait? Do we have to wait? Hopefully that we don't in this case, because that would be fantastic to get the NVIDIA support on an LTS, but we'll have to wait and see. Yeah. But it is cool that they're doing it. The only thing is, I would like to point out that I'm a huge KDE fan, a huge Fedora fan. I'm currently running Fedora 40 KDE right now with Wayland, but I understand why people who have NVIDIA can't really, you know, do that without X. I mean, in some ways, it depends on what you need to do. Like, sometimes it does work, sometimes it doesn't. And it's actually making an interesting discussion that even on the KDE side brings up a debate of, you know, the battle dome of the versus Fedora versus Ubuntu. Because I have, for the long time, been like a big proponent of Kubuntu because it has the benefits of Ubuntu, but it has a KDE Plasma desktop. And then the same thing with Fedora. Fedora KDE has gotten so much better since 35. It's gotten like so good. And then we have a situation now where 2404 Kubuntu has Plasma 5 still, and Fedora KDE has Plasma 6, but has the Wayland only thing. And it's kind of like, which do you choose?
Don't skip ahead, Mike. We haven't gotten to Ubuntu yet. Ubuntu hasn't had a chance.
Yeah, just one thing is that NVIDIA has not enabled explicit sync yet into their proprietary drivers. That is coming down the line.
Interesting.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, it's hopefully coming, but it's not there yet.
Hopefully those...
All right, moving on. With Fedora, we'll talk about Ubuntu and our conclusions of trying both of them this week here momentarily. But I want to spend a moment just real quick talking about the spins, because I feel like, this is just Ryan's opinion, Ubuntu flavors are very well marketed and talked about, but Fedora spins aren't as talked about or even well known as Ubuntu flavors. So Ubuntu calls it flavors when you have things like Kubuntu and Ubuntu Mate, that's their flavors. And Fedora has something similar they call spins, and they have spins for just about literally anything. And
it's basically the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's basically the same thing, but like you have game spin. So the best games available to Fedora, you get the game spin and you've got that all pre-installed when you do the installation. You have an i3 spin, which if you're an i3 prodigy like me, you may want to pick up and try out as a window manager, even though I haven't used i3 in like, I don't know, 2.5 years or more.
Years. But also there's Sway now because of Wayland. And
yeah.
You know,
you have Kino Knight. Kino Knight.
We got an XFCE spin, LXQT, one of our favorite distros, Sway spin, Sugar Python, on a Classroom Stick, Lab. Or the one laptop per child. There's just so many.
Yep. Robotics spin, which you know Wendy may want to check out there. You got a robotics one that specializes in robotics, pretty much science research, anything specific where you want a set of tools for your industry or something specific you do, check out and see if they have a spin available for that, because it just allows you to skip having to go find all the packages and things that relate to the field that you're in. So I think it's really cool.
Spins, they have a KDE spin, by the way.
Yeah. We know, Michael. We know KDE.
What? Did I already mention that? Oh,
yes.
Might have mentioned it once or twice.
All right, in my humble opinion...
In doing research for the notes, looking at all the changes Fedora was doing here and there, Fedora focused way too much in their release notes, I'm talking about, on GNOME enhancements. I'm talking about like Fedora Magazine and other things, versus talking about the changes they made under the hood with Fedora 40. Researching Fedora 40 forced me to have to look through several different sites to find information to kind of gather outside of things on GNOME. Now, I love, don't get me wrong, that they're giving credit to GNOME, because a lot of people's experience, including mine, when I first got into Linux, I thought the desktop environment was the distro. I came from Windows. That's kind of like, you don't think about them as two separate things. So a lot of people's first experience is GNOME. So I think there's something to be said to highlight the changes that are happening on the desktop is what most people see. But the reality is, I want to see all the enhancements that go on behind the scenes as well. And that was very hard to find with Fedora, because a lot of the focus and a lot of their own articles were purely on GNOME. And that's very different when we get into the right corner with Ubuntu, where they did focus a lot under the hood, which I appreciated a little.
Yeah, more. I mean, there was the KDE blog post too that focused on KDE. And then there was the Fedora 40 blog posts where they kind of did like a more overview style, but they didn't really talk about the specifics of like what's the, you know, the big things that's changing. They talked about the AI thing, which was cool, but there was like, I think one paragraph of that. And for the most part, we had to keep digging to find everything. And that's just a thing of like, it's good to have these release notes. And I also really like the fact that they're putting in the effort they are, because if you go to some projects, there was this, I forgot which distribution that did it. They had a release in their release notes that said Pipewire. Thanks. That's super specific.
That was MX, I think you were talking about during that episode. Yeah. Yeah. It is important to give, you know, the details out, because it helps exemplify all the great work that goes on too. That's why, like, it's great to highlight GNOME, because a lot of the work, right, on the desktop environment is what people were going to experience first. But I want to give appreciation to all the developers and the back-end work that happens. And I think that needs to be highlighted as well. And by the way, we gave this advice to Ubuntu about 2 years ago, I want to say. Maybe not even that long ago, where we were talking about their release notes focusing too much on one thing. It was enterprise and IoT devices.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
And what a change. Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying we caused it. We did. But I'm not saying we did. It was us. But
yeah, we're not saying that we did, but we did.
You know, the other thing I want to mention though, real quick, before we get into the Ubuntu stuff, is that Fedora, Red Hat specifically, has sent me 3 hats at this point, and Ubuntu has sent me 0. So from a buying my opinion standpoint, Canonical, you are way behind, just letting you know.
Yeah, if you haven't noticed, Ryan is currently wearing a Red Hat hat.
Yes.
Guess who sent 3 of them. But Canonical has yet, even though when we go to scale, all the Ubuntu people come and rush to us and, no, we love your show, blah, 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 blah.
It is also possible that Ubuntu doesn't make hats.
Yeah. Have you thought of that? That's rude if they don't make hats.
I have tons of Ubuntu t-shirts from scale over the years.
No Ubuntu hats.
I have a bunch of t-shirts. I have quite a few of them.
Calling Canonical out on this hat thing. Their hat hate, you know?
How funny. Yeah. So one of the cool new things.
I think I have a Ubuntu beanie.
Oh.
Actually. Yeah, oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, I have an Ubuntu beanie. That's right. So
yeah,
they gave me something, Ryan.
Yeah.
Because that beanie's super useful in the summer.
Especially in the South, you know.
Yeah. So one of the cool new things about the software app in Fedora 40 workstation is that the FlatHub apps are displayed with their verified badges. Yay, yeah. Finally. That was something that I noticed right off. Actually, the Files app, formerly Nautilus, has a new global search feature, which lets you search files from any location you desire and, you know, any device.
GNOME enhancement again. There you go, Jill, being just like Fedora's, talking about GNOME.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also talking about the GNOME's file manager, which is still technically called Nautilus, but
the package is called
Nautilus. Yeah. But they call it files when you go into the system and you go into the application menu and stuff. And here's the thing that I don't like about GNOME. Okay, there's a few. But I cannot stand the fact that they call their apps files and all this and notes. Podcasts.
I'm releasing a new program called Program, Michael.
Perfect. Really good. Perfect. It's going to be so easy to find that. Because the problem is like, I get why they do it. It's because it makes sense. Like, oh, I want the file manager. I'm going to go to the files thing. That's okay. But it's impossible to search for it. So like, imagine your user go to Google and they type in files. No, files Linux. Nope. Files Linux GNOME. Okay, finally. The problem is they have to know that they are using GNOME in order to do that search.
How many people are searching for files in GNOME, though? Like,
trying to find how to do a certain feature inside of the file manager. I mean, there's like, how do you activate the hidden files or hidden things, or how do you do this the global search? Well, you had to wait until now. But
all right, Jill, you have one more nice thing to say. What was your?
Yes. Yeah, so, and great work to the Fedora team for another beautiful default desktop wallpaper. It's a loosely painted bluish green forest, but when that's used really in dark mode, has the glow of fireflies. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. So I love
always love their desk. Yeah, their wallpapers are always awesome.
It's like watercoloring almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a really cool design, and I really like the fact that they're doing this because they used to have one that was very similar, and I loved it, and I forgot which version it was. And this one is like a reminiscent of that. And it's really cool. I was kind of like hoping that they had like a special Easter egg version. So when it goes in the nighttime, your desktop becomes haunted in the forest.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Well, just a thought if you want to add an extra little thing for another.
Very important, the wallpaper a distro chooses. It's very important.
It is.
Because number one, I'm never going to change it, whatever it is. Yes. And number two.
That's true.
Number two, it's everyone's first experience when you go into a new operating system, and it can change the way you feel about it. When I've gone into distros, generally like community distros, and you boot it up and it's like some, I don't know, manga picture or something like that. It just doesn't feel, or a picture of a car, random picture of a car was one distro had. Like I get they like cars, the developer, whatever, but it makes me feel like I'm on a community project versus like a professional new experience I'm about to have with future of an operating system. So as silly as talking about wallpaper that you can easily change yourself, although I won't, because for instance, I'm still in Zorin OS and it still has the default mountain wallpaper on it that it came with. So that's what I'm looking at right now. It's important, you know? So good job.
The default wallpaper is important. I don't think that all the wallpapers in a particular release is that important, but the default one absolutely is. Yeah. And I also like the fact that they have it built in to be able to convert to night mode, because it does, it makes a lot of sense, but it also makes it feel much better when you do that. Because if you have everything that's in a light mode or a dark mode, and then the wallpaper is super bright, it can be an issue. So I like that they put an effort in.
Plus, as geeks, we don't like to go outside. So I know that it's nighttime by my wallpaper.
Yeah.
Changing, you know?
Exactly.
Your nightlight settings.
Exactly. You could just put your office in a room that has a window.
Nah, that's stupid. It's dangerous outside. All right. So Ubuntu Noble Numbat. I've called you a numbat before, Michael.
Oh.
I don't think you have, because, but I also would like, yeah. They're adorable, so I agree. Thank you. But also, real quick, to tie those two things together, the wallpaper in Ubuntu's 2404 is also nice.
Yeah.
And it does also have the dark mode thing, so very cool. Mm-hmm.
There you go. So Ubuntu Noble Numbat is its LTS that will be supported for 12 years, which is exciting for those who like to keep things mellow. Keep it mellow.
Yeah.
Michael, nice. You get the reference, right?
I get the reference. It's the song for sure.
Yes.
But
who's that song by? Marshmallow?
Marshmallow.
I won't sing it to you all. Go look up the song. It's good.
Wait, please don't, because not necessarily because you're not, because you're singing talent. It's not that. It's copyright strike that instantly hits.
Yeah, because it would be so close to the original if I sang it. Yeah, it would be so accurate. All right, so in this LTS, you also get the latest kernel 6.8, has made some tweaks in addition to that kernel. For instance, merging low latency kernel features into it and reducing kernel task scheduling delays in there. So they made some additional enhancements on top of the kernel, which is very, very cool to see. They also introduced something called frame pointers by default. Now, like me, you may have been like, what's a frame pointer? And this essentially allows...
it's a thing that points to frames.
Yeah, exactly. It allows for complete CPU profiling and off-profiling so engineers can profile their systems for troubleshooting and optimization with precision. And this made me think about that whole XZ thing where the guy had the CPU monitor up and he was able to detect that something was going on.
Yeah.
And when he was making connections and things, and like, I don't think this is related to that specifically, but obviously this allows
it's also
you
to helpful to do that
much
kind of
deeper
thing.
Yeah. Into the CPU for profiling. So, you know, there's a slight performance hit, I guess it takes to have this enabled, very, very minor, minute, non-noticeable, but they felt it was worth it for engineers to be able to do proper troubleshooting. And I agree. So I think that's awesome that they did that. And then they also talked about some partnerships with Intel. Canonical
Since
and Intel.
Since we're doing these random reference, I was hoping you would be like, and then?
And then? No more and then. And then Intel worked together with Ubuntu for the first time ever in an LTS with Intel Quick Assist technology. So Intel
or
Quick,
Quat.
Quat. Numbat.
I don't Quat know. Quat and Numbat. It's Intel Quat and Numbat.
Yeah. You sound like that Bugs Bunny character.
Oh, the Daffy Duck?
Yeah. Quat.
I think I saw an Intel Quat.
Quat enables users to accelerate encryption and compression in order to reduce CPU utilization, improve networking and storage application performance on anything fourth gen and newer, which is very, very cool there. So lots of neat enhancements and partnerships, and that stuff makes me excited. Like, that's the type of stuff I want to read about, because this is showing that they're just much more involved than just getting another release out to say, hey, we have another release. There's these partnerships. There's this performance enhancements going on. There's stuff they're putting on top of the kernel to make it more performant. This is what I want to read about. Fedora is a type. This is a good example.
So, you know, in all fairness, give a little bit to Fedora. They did announce the update to the Fedora Slimbook, which is the Fedora Slimbook 2. So there is that, but I don't remember much else of the partnerships. But also, let's talk about Ubuntu's other changes, because they have released 1.0 of NetPlan. And after 8 years, it's now 1.0. And it always makes me kind of laugh when I see projects have like 1.0 after so many releases. Like, it's okay to do it sooner than, you know, years. If you've had a release that is somewhat production ready, it's okay to call it 1.0. Just, you know.
So Michael AI 1.0, we should, because it's been out for a while.
You should absolutely call it Michael AI 1.0. Yes. Okay. All right. Michael AI 1.0. And also, you should also close that and archive it so that it's, you know, done. That'd be good too.
Never.
Never.
Oh, okay. I'll never let you die. You're forever alive in my AI.
Oh, that's so sweet. Aww. So I live on GitHub, apparently. Yeah. So that's nice.
It's your whole brain downloaded.
There's also some cool stuff that they did for gaming on Ubuntu. They updated some stuff with the memory limits that makes it possible. Like, some games weren't working properly, and this has fixed that sort of stuff. Fedora also did it too. But I and think Fedora already did it before.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it was. Yeah. But anyway, it's cool that they're doing all these different things behind the scenes and improving it. And I think that the out-of-the-box experience for Ubuntu is just getting better and better. Now, some of it is because GNOME is making improvements, and also some of it's because Ubuntu has their customizations on top. And I think that they are, it's a solid option and solid work done by the latest version, because it felt very smooth.
Yeah, agreed. They changed the installer out too. So now the LTS has the same installer as Ubuntu Server, which is Flutter based. So admins rejoice, because your custom images will now work across servers and desktop. And by the way, Ubuntu, and I've been saying this forever, has the best installer out there, absolutely, period, bar none. Yeah.
And so what's funny is that they rewrote their installer, and it's actually also better.
Even made it better than their already better installer that they had than anybody else. And this is the thing that got me with their installer. This is just shows the impact, I think, of this show. Mm-hmm. Their installer now, the very second page of the installer, you pick your language, and the very next page is accessibility now.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that accessibility page is brilliantly done with a breakout of all of the various things, like the hearing, sight impairment, anything. It has them all labeled, and you can go in there and enable all of the features you would need for accessibility right there in a beautiful menu. Well done. And it's so nice to finally see that being taken seriously. You know, the work GNOME did recently on accessibility, but the work on the installer, like, well done, Canonical, on that. That was fantastic.
They integrated the installer with the features of GNOME, and it's so good. Like, the whole seeing, hearing, and other sections where you just have a drop down.
Yeah.
And then there's a little toggle. That's it. You just hit the toggle. It's very good.
Yep. So lots of cool improvements in here. New App Center, which is Flutter-based as well. And just all kinds of different security enhancements and AppArmor enhancements.
This is a silly thing about the installer. I just appreciate it because it's nice. Mm-hmm. So most of the time when you go to these installers, and it doesn't matter. Fedora is an example because we're doing the Versus thing anyway. But it's also, there's like, Osusa has the same kind of thing where they're very technical based, and they feel like they're technical based, and you have to do things more like a technical user would want to do versus than average user. And Ubuntu is more focused on making sure that the install is like the simplest approach and things, but also they put effort into the style. And I just wanted to point it out because I liked it so much, even though it is not worth talking about. At the very bottom, instead of having a progress bar, it has these like flashing lights of like, hey, things are happening right now.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that's so good looking. It's like, just good job. Yeah. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. And so I just want to say that there's no question that Fedora and Ubuntu are both great choices. Depending on your needs, like pick one, you're going to be happy. There may be certain reasons why you'd want to pick one over the other. If you're brand new to Linux, probably Ubuntu, because it's just, there's just so much, many articles and much easier installer.
And also there's stuff they did on like on top of GNOME that makes it easier so you don't have to do them yourself. Like,
yeah.
There are things like that. So I think there's a lot of things where like there's a lot of reasons to use Fedora. There's a lot of reasons to use Ubuntu. It just whatever your preference is.
Here's where Fedora kind of kicks Ubuntu's butt, in my opinion, is the hardware enablement side.
Oh yeah. So love it.
If you're running on the latest hardware, then you know Fedora is just going to be a much better experience because they tend to semi-roll, so you get a lot more of the releases of the driver Mesa, newer Mesa versions and things like that on the Fedora side, where Fedora just kicks butt. And Ubuntu could fix that, and I've been complaining about it for years, but they still haven't. I'm not bitter about it.
I mean, it's not the same because the way Fedora works is very different from the
doesn't
way
matter.
Ubuntu works.
Because Ubuntu not has hardware enablement they do in between their releases. They just don't do it often enough. That's the problem.
Sure. They do it once every 6 months to the LTS.
Yes.
And it's because they pull in the interim release and they put it into the LTS. And it kind of makes sense because...
No, it doesn't make sense.
Because
hardware doesn't release on Ubuntu schedule. Hardware releases
I
when hardware releases.
I understand.
If that happens to be at the beginning of that six-month period, I have to wait 5 months before I can use that hardware in Ubuntu. It's stupid.
I understand. But... the reason I'm saying that I think that it has a valid approach is because when you compare Ubuntu with Fedora, it makes sense, but it's also kind of not fair to Ubuntu because Ubuntu LTS specifically is a distro that is both users distro and it's also an enterprise-based distro. Whereas if you compare Ubuntu LTS to Red Hat, Red Hat takes a lot of time to
do.
That's
true. Okay, that's a fair point. Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah. So maybe I won't yell at you as much because this is an LTS, but your next point release, I'm going to be all over your crap, Ubuntu, just so
you
know.
But they are going to do it. But here's the thing. They're kind of like smart in a way to annoy you as best as possible because the six-month release, that gets updates, but they don't do hardware updates for that one. The next one is to get the gap update. So it's still going to be 6 months. You're still going to be annoyed.
Oh,
and it's kind of beautiful in a way because it annoys Ryan so much. But I also agree that it would be wonderful to see them do it, but I kind of get why they don't. So
I don't get it. Don't get take their side.
I would wish they'd make
different options. You're not going to make them fix this by saying, I understand. We don't understand.
I'm not
speaking
saying
another
that,
language,
I'm not
Ubuntu,
saying
and so
is
Mike
not,
right now.
I'm not saying that it's not,
do not understand
ideal
the words
for them
coming
to get
out of
more
your mouth.
I'm saying what I would like to see is a separate option where you have the LTS stuff that gets the updates every 6 months and then a Ryan option. And specifically, I would love for it to be Ryan's hardware enablement where you just do it that way.
Hey,
or just the Ryan edition or something like that.
Who put me in their release notes for Mate?
It was Ubuntu Mate, I think.
Was it Mate that put me
in? No, I think it was a Mate, the desktop itself. Yeah, I think it's because he complained about something and they're like, okay, Ryan, shut up. They didn't say it that way, but that's how I read it.
It kind of said something like that in the release notes, not shut up, but it was like, so Ryan will quit talking about it or something.
Yeah,
like
that's how I read it anyway.
It was so great. Wimpy did that.
Like, yeah, I think he did.
So. Yeah,
he did.
Yeah. So,
there's a lot of cool stuff. And I just want to say, because there are things that I think that Fedora does that are awesome. So it might seem like I'm promoting Ubuntu over. I'm not. It depends on your use case. Like, yeah. The Destination Linux is a podcast that is meant to be for any kind of level, 100%. Whether you're new or for your experience. And if you're an experienced user, you might like Fedora more than Ubuntu. And if you're a beginner, then Ubuntu might be the best option for you. But there are things that Fedora does that I think are great. Like you said, the hardware enablement thing, that's awesome. The fact that they have, there's a term called bleeding edge. Fedora does not associate to that term. They have the cutting edge. And that's they still make updates in between releases. And they make big updates sometimes, including versions of the desktop environment being updated. So like if you have Plasma 6.0, if 6.1 comes out before, it's possible they'll still get it. Same thing with GNOME. And that is awesome that Fedora does that. But there are certain things that Ubuntu does that Fedora doesn't. And that is, for example, of GNOME, changing stuff so that the out-of-the-box experience is a much better experience. And there's a lot of examples you can give here, but I'm just going to give you one that bothered me during the test. And that is Fedora GNOME, or the Fedora workstation with GNOME 46, has no detection of the monitor's resolution. So the 4K monitor was super small. Like all the UI was so small. Yeah. And then when I loaded up Ubuntu, it was fine. It was exactly what it should be. And when I go to change the Fedora GNOME, it only gives me the option of 100% or 200% because that's the default of GNOME. And there is a way to do fractional scaling, but by default, it's not there for some reason. Whereas Ubuntu just had it already doing fractional scaling, detecting it and doing it for me. And those kinds of things are very important for the out-of-the-box experience. And
so this is interesting because I want to mention that for a while, we've been on Ubuntu's case pretty hardcore. And I will say for myself, for a few years there, Ubuntu, Canonical, I was ripping you a new one pretty much every episode, and you deserved it. And now to see...
And you deserved it, just to be clear.
You deserved it. They really did. And now I see these new releases, and I'm like, dang, this is the Ubuntu I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of like the Ubuntu when I was getting into Linux. They were like, they were providing such a good option for users, and they're going back to like the roots of that, and it's awesome.
They're nailing it, and they're still enabling the new technologies and things for the enterprise, which is I know is where they make their money. It makes sense. That's why they were putting their attention there. But the desktop was like a bad afterthought for a minute there, and now I feel like they're back in the game because for a while, Fedora was it for me. I was like, if somebody wanted a new distro, I'm like, get over the not so great installer process and then have a great distro because Fedora is it. Like, that's the one you're going to use. And now it truly is like either one you choose, you're going to have a really good experience. But I'm happy to see Canonical back in the game. I just want to say that. See, I'm fair, Michael. I'll beat you. But as soon as you apologize, I stop beating you. I mean, that's fair.
Well, you know,
I don't think that's a fair. That's not how fair works.
Oh, we'll talk
several
about
months
later.
Ago, we had did our reviews on Ubuntu 23.10, and that was an amazing release. That was really their transition with focusing on the desktop. Agreed. And my Intel Arc A770 worked out of the box. Mm-hmm. So that was huge. And actually, I will be upgrading my podcasting rig from Ubuntu 23.10 to Ubuntu 24.04 LTS as soon as there is an announcement for the automatic upgrade in a few weeks. It is supposed to come. And I could just force an upgrade now, but I prefer to wait for the official upgrade to Ubuntu 24.04 LTS because I like the point releases and all the fixes that it comes with.
Yeah. So there's also the case of like 23.10 to 24.04. Some people are reporting that there's issues with the updates.
Yeah.
And so it's good that you're waiting for the thing because some people are forcing it and go in the command line.
Yeah.
If you do it through the button when it's available, they only do that when they know for sure that it's going to be okay. Yeah. So that I suggest that everybody waits. And it is important that you compare the difference between 23.10. The update is very short. Like, it doesn't take very long, maybe like a week or two usually. And then with the LTS, that could take about 3 months or so.
Yeah.
And the reason is because 24.04 or 22.04 jumping to 24.04 is a really big jump. So they put a lot more effort into the testing. And they wait until the first point release comes out before they do the LTS jump. So if you are using LTS, you're going to wait a little bit longer than the 2310 users.
Nice. That's a really good tip and trick there, Michael. Yeah. You did good on that part. That was the first thing you said intelligent on the whole show.
That is not true, but I appreciate your compliment.
Oh, good job.
That was Michael. Also like kind of slapping in the face at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's a double-sided compliment.
I beat you.
That's not how that works.
The automatic
still doesn't upgrade, work that way.
The automatic upgrade that Michael was just referring to from Ubuntu 22.04 to 24.04 is actually scheduled for August 15th.
Oh, nice.
That's really good. And like we were talking about before, Ubuntu just has always had one of the easiest and streamlined installers, really one of the best installers of all time. And this release, like we were saying, is even better. It's just got all these visually, it's just easier to read. Mm-hmm. And it's the layout is so nice. It's like Michael was saying about the like almost the little sparks for the installation.
But all the advanced features are there, like ZFS support and other stuff that they've added. Like all the advanced stuff, the Active Directory settings,
accessibility,
all of that's there.
Lots of cool stuff. But I mean, somehow also they did done the whole in a way that PPAs
is simple to follow.
Yeah. And the other point I wanted to make is that the Software Center is actually greatly improved. It's much faster and better organized and easier to use. I found it even faster than the 23.10 release. It was just, it turned on.
Yay. So I agree. And also, I'm going to have some weird comments on this episode, okay? I mean, from people who were sending in comments on the YouTube videos and the forum and stuff like that, I feel like there's going to be some weird comments about this because I'm a Fedora user and I'm going to be defending Ubuntu right now because there was like an article that was written, I think it was It's Foss, that was talking about how they were so mad at Canonical and Ubuntu for not having the ability to install deb files inside of their new App Center. Which is not it couldn't do dev files, but that if you download a dev from the internet, when you double click it, it doesn't open in the store is what they were saying. And it was interesting because there has been a time where that was possible. And there was also a time before that where it wasn't possible and people were not yelling at them like, oh, they did something horrible. And now they are. And I feel like it's kind of weird because that's kind of the normal when you compare it to anything other than other Linux operating systems. So
I see their point that once you give that feature, it's different when you don't have it. But once you give it and take it away, you're kind of like Apple, right? Like
I agree.
Now you have no audio port.
I'm not saying they shouldn't make it possible. I'm saying what they should do is just do it differently. For example, you brought up Apple. If you install an image or a DMG from somewhere, it doesn't open in the App Store in Apple. It opens in this little thing where you have to do a drag and drop sort of thing.
Because the App Store in Apple's terrible.
It is terrible, but I'm just saying the concept is you don't, they have another utility. What I'm saying is I don't think it's a horrible thing that App Center doesn't have this feature. All they have to do is install GDebi. Or it's GDebi, and that solves the problem. You can install it still.
That's what I
think
use.
I think that's a reasonable solution.
All you have to do is install this package that you may not even know exists until you listen to this show.
I'm saying Ubuntu should do that.
Yeah,
Ubuntu should have that. Instead of dealing with, let's make App Center function with these things, here's an option. And then I also think they should make it where it pops up and says, are you sure you want to do this? You are installing a third-party tool that you downloaded from the internet and warn the user. Because if it opens in the App Center, it might make people think that it's, it's part of
legit.
The App Center.
Maybe that's why they turned it off. But here's how you do that warning, Michael, with Clippy. Since Clippy's open source now.
You have Clippy. I hear you're trying to install something. Would you like help with that?
Yeah.
Perfect. Love it. Love it.
One of the other major new features that I was just thrilled about, this is actually one of my favorites for this release, is this is something I've always loved about Pop! OS. Ubuntu 24.04 has a dedicated firmware updater now. Woohoo! Talk about hardware enablement. So when I installed Ubuntu 24.04 LTS on one of my test machines, it automatically found an update for my Logitech Unified USB dongle for my mouse and keyboard. And that was just so sweet. And it's like, oh, this is Ubuntu, you know, because on Pop, I've had it for the last few years, and it was just so refreshing. Oh my God, we got it in Ubuntu now.
That's awesome.
You only have to wait 6 months for your hardware works to get that update, firmware update, but once you do
that's not necessarily
I'm
true. Just,
I'm being ugly to make a point, Michael. Let me have my ugly face on.
Hardware updates and firmware updates are different things.
Yeah.
So like,
but you have to have the hardware working to be able to do a firmware update in the distro. And so if you can't actually boot your machine because they haven't enabled the hardware to begin with, then you'll never get the firmware update. You know what I mean?
Yes, but still.
And one of my other favorite features of this release are the beautiful Noble Numbat wallpapers like we were talking about earlier, especially the pink ones, of course.
You think they added that for Jill?
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
And there are two different pink ones, both the one that is more graphical and the one that is drawn more photoreal. I love them both. And the fact that it also has the dark mode features as well. Mm-hmm. And for those of you out there that don't know, a numbat is actually a cute extinct marsupial from Australia. And extinct. They're extinct. And I have seen them at our local zoo. So they're only like most of them are only that are alive are in zoos.
So they're not extinct.
That's not extinct then.
Well, it's a number of numbers. So if it's
they're in a category of instinct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that is a bummer.
They are around, but there's so few of them that they're considered extinct worldwide.
Oh.
Yeah.
From
Australia.
So hopefully, at some point, I would like to go to a zoo and now see one.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. What's going on, Australia? Why are you messing with the numbats?
Yeah.
Cool. I don't necessarily think it's Australians that are doing it. I think it's the fact that Australia is the melting pot of crazy death animals that
in
some places they're like murder cats, aka lions. And Australia, it's like every animal
is even
trying to kill other animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
They kind of just look like a squirrel to me. You know?
So cute.
Yeah. I mean, they are kind of squirrelish looking, yeah.
It's basically just a squirrel with a different name.
So I have a plan.
Not impressed with the numbat.
I mean, it's not the most adorable animal. That's true. That's called a quokka. And people should go check those out.
Yeah, they are cute.
And hopefully, and actually, like might as well just put it out there. In three more releases, we are at Q again. And it better be a quokka.
Very good, Michael.
It better be a quokka. Okay. Anyway, but let's move on. And we're at the close to the end of the Battle Dome. But I wanted to bring up something that I think is interesting, the way that Fedora handles GNOME and how Ubuntu handles GNOME. Because it's not necessarily that Fedora is not doing things that are they're not purposefully making stuff harder. It's that Fedora does things on all these projects on the upstream approach. Whatever the upstream offers, Fedora likes to offer that because they like to be as close to upstream as possible on basically everything. The problem here is that GNOME's upstream default vanilla offering is not good, and that creates an issue for people. So that's why when Ubuntu makes all these changes and improves it, like making the 4K detection work where it doesn't in default GNOME, or making certain features
more accessible.
Yeah. Like there's so many things or extensions being there.
Dash to dock, dash to pay.
App indicators.
Extensions. There's lots of things. And this is not necessarily saying that it's bad that Fedora does it that way. It's that's the thing that they want to do. It's more like saying, hey, GNOME, stop it. Make some... improve the out of the box. I would think that you'd want to do that.
They did a lot of work recently. They still haven't fixed the app indicator. So
hey, Ryan, what about the tray icons?
Shut up, Michael. Shut up. We're not going to talk about that. All right. So as far as my opinion on who wins, and I'm talking about this release, I'm not saying overall what the best distro is. We're not going into that. I'm just saying for this release, which one kept my interest the most. We're calling this the Ryan Drool Meter. And the Ryan Drool Meter gives Ubuntu an 8.5, which is a really good score.
8.5 of what? 8.5 drools or 8.5 ounces of drool?
8.5 drools. To Ubuntu on this. They could have gotten a solid 9.5 or 10. Almost got 9
drools.
Had they done something more with the hardware enablement, like, hey, we're now going to release faster hardware enablement, and then you would have got the 9.5, 10 out of 10 drools, but you didn't. And Fedora, I'm going to give you 5.5 drools here.
Oh, that's a lot less drools.
It's a lot less drools because I need you to work on your release notes, and I need you to put more emphasis on things outside of GNOME and everything that you write. Even if we're talking about Fedora Workstation in Fedora Magazine, like, GNOME's awesome, and that's the first experience. You can still talk about it, but also talk about all the other things you did under the hood as well.
But they shouldn't get that many knocks just because of the blog post.
It's not just because of that. It's because, honestly, even after doing all the research, there just wasn't as much exciting stuff that they did as Canonical.
Fair enough.
So there you go.
So it's interesting because I wonder what the difference, like the
in
significant
this release,
difference.
To be specific.
Yeah. It's interesting that you're saying that because on the amount of drools I would give them is I would give Fedora 7 drools, actually. Okay. Because I do think that they're doing a lot of cool stuff, and you're not considering how awesome Plasma 6 is, and Fedora is one of the first to have Plasma 6. Especially, it's definitely one of the first mainstream distros to have it. And for those who are going to be in the comments about OpenSUSE, OpenSUSE Tumbleweed is different. Leap doesn't have it yet, so it's, you know, that's a conversation for another day. But I would give Ubuntu 2404 LTS Noble Numbat.
Here we go.
8.8 drools.
Woo!
I do think it's very, very good. I think that it's a solid option out of the box. I think the experience for the beginning user is going to have a lot of value from this. And it's hard to... I understand. I'm going to agree with the whole hardware enablement. If you had that, it would make it even much, much better. But what it is now, I think it's a very solid option. And... of course, the only thing, if you would get a 9, maybe a 9.5, if you had flat packs out of the box. I know why you don't, but it would be awesome if you did.
Oh, man, yeah.
So, you know, that's just
the option of both, right? Some snaps, some flat
packs. Or at least make it easier to install. Like, put it in the installer thing, like the person can choose it. I love the fact that you can just click the button, get the codecs, click the button, get the support for the various different things, and that's awesome. But let's put a button in there for flat packs. That'd be nice because that way you're still not technically agreeing to support it, but you're making it easier to get access. And if you did that, I would give you a 9.2 drools on there.
Yeah.
But
Jill, how many drools are you giving Fedora?
Okay. So Fedora gets 7.5.
Okay.
And Ubuntu gets 9.5.
Whoa. 9.5 drools. Now, we didn't know what the scores were going to be before this episode, and we made a trophy of drool that we were going to send to Ubuntu, but they declined.
Oh, trophy.
I'm kidding.
Very good decision.
We literally did not.
We actually didn't know what each other was going to rate the different distributions. We also didn't know that Ryan was going to have a drool meter.
We didn't know that.
By the way, Wendy, who does the editing, add some drool meter?
Don't do that.
Like a drool meter across Wendy, the top banner.
I don't know what that would look like, but don't
do that. It'd be take my face logo and have drool coming off of it and then put like 6 or 7 or whatever our rating is.
That would be fun.
Above
the
our
higher,
head.
The faster the drool drops.
Yeah.
And you know what's so funny, Ryan, is every time you and Michael said Battle Dome, my first thought is Mad Max. I mean, come on.
Mad Max
so,
better.
So absolutely. If we're going by the Mad Max level, Ubuntu uses purples and oranges, which is closer to Mad Max colors.
True. Very true.
But that has no relevance.
Well, congratulations to both distros, Canonical.
Fedora 40 is fantastic.
Talking about these specific releases, again, I just want to be clear on that. We're not saying overall one's better than the other. These specific releases we're rating there. And Canonical, let us know if you want the trophy because we will have it made. We'll have a drool trophy sent to you.
Yes, if you want it, we will make it. And
by the way, my
I'm
picture
sorry
was in that, Canonical's office at one point. Do you remember this, Michael?
What? No.
Yeah, what? They had my picture in one of their office. Again, I think it was a wimpy pokey
thing. Was it because they had the thing and it said, this guy will not stop talking about hardware?
Or something. Yeah, yeah. There was something about them making fun of me not shutting up about their hardware anymore.
So they still have it fixed. I actually don't know what you're talking about. Maybe that happened. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised because I assume a lot of companies have our photos to just throw darts at our faces. Like, for example, like when Microsoft, you know, we talk about how Microsoft listens to the show and they're like, oh, they probably because they have target practice. But now for Canonical, if you want to put Ryan's face in your office, you can have the drool meter version of it.
Yes.
And we can have, and maybe we can have it animated. Well, who knows? There's potential here.
But you're friends with Spaceman.
Yeah.
And so
me and Spaceman are super buds. Yeah.
Ask him if he wants his drool
truck. I call him Space Bud. So.
Space Bud. There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
And Mark Shuttleworth has lived up to everything that he talked about with us about, you know.
Now I'm voting for him for president. Yeah.
He can't run for our presidency.
Well, he's actually done more. I'm not getting politics.
This episode of Destination Linux is sponsored by Linbit. Linbit has been keeping digital businesses running for over 20 years. They're the makers of open source products like DRBD, which is high availability software that has been part of the Linux kernel since 2010, and LinStore, industry-leading open source software-defined storage. Linbit has an active presence in the open source community, and they collaborate with the community to help identify and build new features. Linbit provides enterprise-grade software that runs on a variety of platforms and OSs without vendor lock-in. What that means is that you could choose the software on any platform, including specific hardware that you want to use, or just off-the-shelf hardware that you get and connect it. All of this stuff can be interchanged really easily. And with DRBD and LinStore, you can have high-speed replicated block storage in almost any configuration, whether it's Kubernetes, Apache Cloud, or OpenNebula. There's even DRBD proxy for long-distance replication. Linbit is run by its founders to this day, and all of its engineers and developers are in-house with offices in Europe and North America, which allows them to have global 24/7 support to complement their enterprise offerings. Visit linbit.com to learn more about the people behind Linbit and the awesome software for block storage, duplication, and more.
In honor of Michael's recent rant on League of Legends, we are doing our part to highlight the superior Linux-friendly game, Dota 2, the classic.
I like ranting.
With over 2 million very positive reviews.
2 million.
This game is a staple in the MOBA, or multiplayer online battle arena gaming genre. It's the most played game on Steam and has an incredible amount of competitive chess-like strategy. And if you get good enough, you can make a living playing it professionally. The game...
We will never do that.
On Steam.
I don't know, Michael. We were pretty good at CSGO.
We were good at CSGO when we were playing against the computer.
Yeah. We weren't even good then. We were
We weren't. I wish we had the copy of that. I'm pretty sure we did stream it, didn't we? I don't remember.
We streamed it one time, but the time me and you literally, I almost peed myself laughing so hard. We played together. We did not record it for some stupid reason. That's the time I tried to grenade you.
And also they had like a special edition where they had snowballs and throwing snowballs at each other.
Yeah.
And we spent more time doing that. And also when we play in this mode as like a mission game or whatever. And every time you would die, you have to start over the entire process. And we started we started annoying each other by trolling each other and killing each other right before we get to the last part, and then we have to start all over again. And we should have recorded. I wish we had. We also just need to record. We just need to play some more games and annoy each other so we can have that content. We're so good at that. We were terrible at that game. Do you remember how we beat it?
Level of the computer.
Yeah. Do you remember how we beat it though?
No. Did we cheat?
Okay. So we have sort of. So we eventually beat it because we played this thing so many times. I think we played it like 30 or 40 times until we gave up. Like, we're not going to beat this. It's whatever.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine he was like, hey, you want to play Counter-Strike? Like, not really, but I thought about it. Oh, what if I play, this guy is actually really good at shooting. So, you know, Bunny, he would come.
Oh yeah, Bunny. That's right.
Yeah. Ballistic Overkill. He would join us and destroy everyone.
Yeah.
So he joined me in this, and I was like, hey, let's play this. He's like, okay. He basically told me how to, with his first try, explained everything how to beat this particular thing. And I was like, okay. So we come back in the next, and so me and Ryan are playing again, and I don't tell him that I know how to do it now. And I'm like, ooh, I figured it out. He's like, you cheating. Who told you how to do this?
Yeah, because there was like parts where you had to jump over these boxes and onto these pipes and get into a different room. Like, you wouldn't know that just by walking into the room. Michael's like, oh, jump on the boxes and the pipes and go into the other room.
This is how you do it, Ryan. You can't do it because you're not as good as a gamer as I am.
I remember watching some of your Counter-Strike streams.
The ones we did stream are also still hilarious, for sure. Like, you should go check them out if you haven't. All right,
sorry, Dota. We just went down memory lane.
I mean, it is still technically a Valve game.
A Valve game. Sure. Yeah. So the game Dota on Steam describes itself like this. Dota is the deepest multiplayer action RTS game ever made, and there's always a new strategy or tactic to discover. It's completely free to play and always will be. Start defeating your ancient now. Yeah. And yeah, Dota 2 was actually released by Valve on Steam for Linux on July 18th of 2013, just after the TF2 release. Yeah, the Team Fortress 2 release.
And also, Dota 3 is coming out on July 18th of never.
Oh, man, I was actually excited there for a second.
A third portal. We don't have a third.
Valve can't count to three, so obviously that's fine. Yeah. It was actually kind of funny because we were talking about a long time ago, we were talking about how SteamOS hasn't released the Steam Deck. The 3.0 of SteamOS has not been released yet.
Yeah.
And someone made a comment of like, well, it's because they can't count to three. They're never going to release it, obviously.
Yeah. Right, like Half-Life. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Whole Half-Life.
Good point. And also, but Dota 2 is still getting massive updates all the time. So,
I mean. It sure is. And it looks more beautiful than ever. They're constantly, you know, updating the engine. Mm-hmm. And I was just so impressed because I hadn't played it in a while. And they really increased the graphics quality. It's really good.
Now, you need to go check out Michael. rant on his YouTube channel about this, because this next sentence will not make sense to you unless you watch that, which is they've also somehow enabled anti-cheat without having to run full-scale malware on your machine that runs 24/7 and, you know, basically turns your machine into a hackable, penetratable disaster.
Disaster.
Everyone else. Saying. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting, you should check it out for sure to get all the details, basically to give the context. So Valve has the VAC system to block cheaters. And the way they do it is basically they figure out people who are cheating and they ban them. And it makes sense. But all these other companies are making these kernel level anti-cheats, which effectively is a rootkit into your computer that gives them access to your kernel, which means they have access to everything. So that's terrible. I made a video because Riot Games, who makes League of Legends, decided to do this, destroying the support on Linux for League of Legends, which really didn't work very well in the first place. And you had to jump through a bunch of hoops. And I mean, the Lutris team was awesome because they were able to make it work for people who wanted to play it. And I love the fact that they were able to do that. But Riot Games was like, no. We don't like that fact that you can play it because you're using a system we do not approve. And actually, they didn't say that technically.
Because Linux isn't garbage, it's not going to allow you access into the whole kernel to have uninhibited access to everything on the machine.
But like it also Windows isn't necessary in the first place, though.
Yeah.
The fact that Windows lets you do it is ridiculous. But so, during the process of making that video, I was doing a lot of research and I found out that Epic Games' Easy Anti-Cheat and BattleEye, which both work in Proton, are kernel-level anti-cheats.
Yeah.
And I was like, how does that make any sense? How do they work on Linux if they can't get access to the kernel? They can get access to the Wine kernel, which means that they have the ability to still do the anti-cheat thing inside of Proton games.
You can have my Wine kernel, you idiots.
Exactly. We get protection, whereas Windows users got to have to deal with the nonsense.
Yeah.
But it's also important to point out that technically speaking, their anti-cheats are not malware because they're just supposedly not doing anything. Allegedly, they're fine or whatever. But there was a frequently asked question section on the Riot Games announcement where they said, oh, League is getting this thing. And it's so ridiculous because they have this thing is like, isn't Vanguard spyware? That's the question. And their response is no. And then it's just like a ridiculous nonsense about how they're offended that you could even say it that way. And like, if it's mathematically possible that it would be, you know, the best way to farm retweets on Twitter and blah, 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 blah. And it's funny because they use the term spyware and rootkit in that whole denial. However, the question was, is it spyware? And they associate the word rootkit with the spyware denial. And the rootkit is, yes, it is a rootkit.
First of all, you're giving away too much of a fantastic video and fantastic investigation done.
But here's the thing. There are a lot more things to this. They
I just want to say
annoyed the
to everyone of like, you need to watch this video because it not only talks about to me the lack of security in Windows by allowing any software to have that level of access that's not say certified as an antivirus or something along those lines into your kernel, but just the kind of stupidity of what's happening in gaming. And gaming is going through similar to what movies are going through, this terrible period of basically all of the big studios releasing dud after dud after disappointment and frustrating the heck out of so many people. Yep. And this is why, because they just are losing touch with their community in such a big way, which is why it's just better to find kind of the homegrown games and smaller game studios and things where you don't have to deal with a lot of this nonsense. But
well, even then, some of them are going ridiculous too, because like Escape from Tarkov, they were like, hey, everybody like our game? Great. Here's a DLC that costs $250.
Right.
What? Yeah. yeah. So there's still some examples of even the smaller ones doing ridiculous things, but this anti-cheat stuff is a very annoying thing.
Cheaters suck. Yeah. And if you cheat, you suck because you ruin the game. You really do. But
if you cheat, and here's the thing, I said this in a twill a little while ago, and I got a comment that was really interesting, and it was like, I do this and blah, and they're talking about cheating not necessarily being what I was referring to. They were talking about how like, oh, you could hack the game and find like Easter eggs and glitches and, you know, cheat in that way. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people who play a game that is meant to be competitive and they cheat during the competitive play. Those people are actually losers both in the game and in life because they have to cheat in order to convince themselves they're good at a game. And that's just sad.
Yeah.
It's just sad. Sad. Cheeto fingers. Sad.
If you're bad at the
Cheeto
game,
fingers.
You know what you could do? Enjoy being bad at the game like Ryan and I do.
Exactly.
We're not good at games, but you can still have fun with it because it's funny to embrace your terribleness.
There you go.
Everybody says get good. You don't have to. We have proof of that.
We get bad and worse. Probably if we played CSGO now, we'd literally be worse than we were. All right, Jill, take us into the software spotlight.
We should do
okay. So in honor of the XC exploit being discovered due to an unusual spike in CPU activity, our software spotlight this week is Mission Center. And the beautiful Mission Center is a nicely organized application that lets you monitor your CPU, memory, disk, network, and CPU usage. And it's all displayed in a nice GUI with tons of additional features and graphs so you can be the next person to capture something fishy going on with an app.
Ryan, and you can do it.
Yeah, you can do it. Ooh. You can do it. You can find that exploit, Ryan.
I'm running it right now, in fact.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah,
so beautiful.
Are you finding something?
Some of its features include see system process thread and handle count, uptime, clock speed, base and current, and cache sizes. You can monitor RAM and swap usage, how the memory is being used by the system, monitor disk utilization and transfer rates. You can monitor network utilization and transfer speeds, and see network interface information. And monitor overall GPU usage, video encoder and decoder usage, which is big, memory usage and power consumption. And it's powered by the popular NVIDIA Top project, which is one of my favorite projects, by the way. I use that on on my NVIDIA GPU machines. And Mission Center is available as a flat pack over at FlatHub or in your system software center if it has flat pack support.
There you go.
So it's easy to get.
Flat packs.
Yeah.
I just saw a spike, Michael. Are you hacking me? Oh, there's another little spike.
Of course I am.
Okay, cool.
I'm using the anti-cheat from Riot Games.
Yeah. But I was really happy that it had video encoder and decoder usage because when you're in programs like Blender that DaVinci Resolve where it's requiring more CPU and RAM usage, you can really point that down and see.
Or super complex things like Michael AI.
Yeah, or Michael AI or any AI in general.
More specifically, Michael AI. It's the most complex system, large language model ever made.
Although it's 56 kilobytes and it'll fit on a floppy disk.
It's based on me, therefore it is the most complicated, the best one ever made.
His entire brain.
It's the best. Downloaded. It is unmatched. ChatGPT. No.
Use that.
Nothing.
Llama.
For nothing.
Whatever.
Run on a
Gemini.
286.
You wish, Gemini.
Yeah.
Michael AI can run on a 286.
That's how proficient my coding is.
A 386 on Linux.
That's not a diss on you, Michael. That's just how good I am of a coder that I fit your entire brain on 56 kilobytes.
No, if my entire brain, that's the proof that it's the best AI that automatically.
It's very memory efficient. But for it to calculate.
So am I.
Yes, for it to calculate takes a little bit more beef. So,
dang, I think she just called you a wimp. All right,
I don't even know.
Michael,
I don't know.
Go to the tip of the week.
I don't have to take this. Okay,
you pretty much
this
have
is
to.
The Battle Dome, after all.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. I did start the Battle Dome thing, I guess. All right, let's go to the tip of the week, and this is from Jan or Jan. Who says, I was listening to the episode from Scale where you discussed online safety. Did you know that you can use duck.com email address in Bitwarden to generate random email addresses for your usernames? I did not know that. That is very cool. You can even reply from that email address just as you would from any other email address. That is very important because some of these, masked emails don't let you have be able to reply. So that's very cool.
Yeah.
So,
and there's going to be a link in the show notes that tell people exactly how to do that from bitwarden.com. So you can go to bitwarden.com and check out their blog where they talk about adding the email aliases with Bitwarden. And what a great combination.
You can also go to bitwarden.com/tux and just.
There you go. bitwarden.com/tux. By the way, Michael, next week, right around the corner, something exciting is happening.
This is, okay, people, for those who don't know, Ryan likes to say the phrase right around the corner. All the time when it's not remotely around the corner. This one actually is.
Wow.
Because technically speaking, while we're recording this, it is right around the corner and it is next week. However, when this releases, we'll already be on the flights. Probably we'll already be there.
But we'll at least
be on the flights. Yeah. We're time traveling right now. We're physically traveling and time traveling. That's flashbacks. That's not time traveling.
Okay. I don't know what
time traveling is like.
Yeah. I'm so sad. I'm not going to be there with you guys. I'm so bummed.
I know.
Especially since May 8th is actually my birthday. It just happened to be coincidental.
You really should just come and surprise us, Jill.
I know.
You should.
Because honestly, who's going to control us with Jill? We're going to be unfettered.
I'm sorry, Red Hat. Sorry.
You should have never invited just us, Red Hat. What a mistake.
They technically did invite Jill. Jill couldn't go. So I'm like.
But I'm saying like.
Still.
They should have said, never mind.
Yeah.
Okay. They should have backed off at that point.
Aww. You guys are going to have a marvelous time. Really. I've been to a lot of the Linux Foundation events and they wine you and dine you and have great receptions and just go all out. And I know the Red Hat Summit is no different.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. And when we get back, we're going to show you some clips and stuff. Some maybe like a vlog. Who knows? We'll do some, definitely do some video stuff. So we'll put it in a future episode. And also we're going to let you know what ranking the Red Hat Summit gets on the Ryan's drool meter.
Ooh, good.
And,
The one that Wendy has now created an animation for. And if she hasn't at this point, she has Wendy. To now because I've called her out twice on it.
Okay, Wendy, don't worry. You have my permission to not do it.
So. Wendy, if you don't have the skill to do it, don't do it, Wendy. So if you're not skilled enough to be able to make that simple graphic, then I guess don't do it, Wendy. But otherwise, you know, I'm talking big because she's not in chat right now.
Yeah, since I also know Wendy, that is probably going to make her do it.
All right, so Red Hat Summit, May 6th through the 9th in Denver, Colorado. If you don't have tickets, go get them. You know why? You'll get to see Michael and I there. And this is the first time we're actually going to get to go to a conference and enjoy it and not have a booth and other stuff set up.
Okay, first of all, enjoy scale too.
Oh, well, we enjoy it, but I mean, we don't get to participate in it. Yes. That's what I should
say. Yeah, you don't get to go to the talks and do all the things.
We don't get to attend the conference. We get to work the conference. There's a difference.
Yeah, there you go.
But this is going to be awesome because there's also, I can't wait for the Denver puppy petting zoo thing or whatever. I don't know why.
I don't know why you're excited about
what
it.
I want
to. I'm just going to put a leash around you and let people pet your head. Because you're a dog. Oh, man. That's so good.
But also, people say like dog as like, you know, buddy or friend. It's like, what's up, dog? You know, so like, I'm okay with that if that's what you mean. But if you're trying to say that I am as adorable as a puppy, I agree. You're right.
All right.
Aww.
Nice turnaround there. A big thank you each and every one of you for supporting us by watching or listening. However you do it, we love your faces. Because of you, we get to do cool stuff like go to, you know, Red Hat Summit and enjoy that. Which, by the way, we're going to go to the Red Hat Summit and this episode's going to be released while we're there. And we're going to have the developers of Fedora right there to yell at us about our remarks on Fedora.
Oops. Yeah. Well, actually, in a way, that's kind of good because they get to give us feedback directly to us and we get to come back the next week and say how wrong we were.
No, we're right.
I'm kidding. Obviously, we're right. I mean, you know, when are we wrong? That's really the question.
Did you know you can watch this show live, Michael?
Is it possible for us to be wrong?
No.
Okay, now that we've settled that, yes, you can watch this show live, and all you have to do is become a patron of the show.
That's it? I'm going to do that now.
That's it. You go to tuxdigital.com/membership, and you get access to watch the show live. And in addition to that, that's not all the perks you get. You get tons of perks. And another special perk for patrons is that you get to come into the patron-only post show that happens every week after the show. So you get to watch it live and then hang out with us in the patron post show. So go to tuxdigital.com/membership to do that. And if you would like to support the show and the network, we have other ways to do it. Specifically, we have some awesome merch and some swag. So go to tuxdigital.com/store. You can get some t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, and even so much more. We're even making more as more and more.
Starbucks. What is it?
No, not that. No. Neither of those things are there. Maybe in the someday in the future, but for now, we are not partnered with Starbucks. So that is not happening. But you can get some awesome swag that's not Starbucks related at the tuxdigital.com/store. And we also have the Retro Vibes collection for Destination Linux. Go check that out. And there's a lot more coming. So bookmark that address,
by
the way.
We came up with the new shirt this episode, and I feel like it was...
Oh, the Spec Ops to DevOps.
Yeah.
Dude, that one will not be that hard. Can you just go ahead and make that and put that out there, please?
How dare you suggest that I will do a job that you would do?
I could go do it, except you're going to have to recreate it anyways, so... Because my art's equivalent of a 3-year-old with crayons, and maybe that
but
would
you,
make
you
cool
have so
shirt.
Much. But like Jill said, you have so much good work with the white space.
Yeah,
that's very abstract. Yeah. And
Jill finds something good in everything, doesn't she?
Even stuff good that doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Like Ryan's art.
Yeah. And make sure to check out all the cool shows here on Tux Digital. That's right. We have a whole network of shows to fill your entire week with geeky goodness. Check out Linux Out Loud with Matt, Nate, and Wendy having a blast and sharing their passion for Linux and open source. And everyone head to TuxDigital.com and subscribe to all our great shows. And don't forget to leave a rating on your favorite app, whether it's 5 stars.
Drools.
Leave 5 stars.
Or drools.
If it's 5 thumbs up. Leave 5 thumbs up so others can discover the power of open source and keep those penguins marching in the full Monty of Linux and open source awesome sauce.
By the way, If Wendy makes a cool animation with the drooling stuff, then check out Linux Out Loud. If in this episode you've watched it and there is no animation, go ahead and skip that podcast, Linux Out Loud, because clearly they're talentless hacks if they didn't make the drool.
I don't know what Wendy is going to do to you in this episode, but there's something's going to happen. Like I suspect something is going to happen. Also, by the way, I'm surprised when we're talking about Red Hat and we're going to go to Red Hat, you didn't say something about how they could figure out who we are and find us and like something to like look at the tall guy or whatever. But I wanted to bring up something that I think is because there are times that people think that, you know, they don't know how tall I am. And I just want to show you something that would give you an indicator of like that. I was actually working on getting a new microphone and I found the perfect one. So this is the microphone I found and it indicates how
Look at the little baby. Yay.
It's
just small in his hands. That's a full size microphone. Ones. Yeah.
That's great that Michael has that.
This also, it comes with a little stand.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cute.
Oh, I like the stand.
And it was only like $10. And I was like, I saw this and actually it was in a review at NAB, which is hilarious.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it does work.
Does it really?
It actually works quite well.
It's a real microphone. It also, the test, the person said they got it for the joke and they tested it and said, this is actually pretty good.
Dude, you should have done the whole podcast on that mic, man.
But then I'd be holding it like this and it'd be really loose.
that's how we'll do our interviews at Red Hat Summit. And people will be like, I got this
for that reason. Yeah. We're going to take it to the Red Hat Summit and be like,
that would be awesome.
What do you think about Destination Linux? They're like,
we think you're weird. Why do you have that? Think you're really, really weird. All right. Well, everybody, have a great week. And remember that the journey itself is just as important as the destination. Thanks, everyone.
We'll see you next week.
Love you all.
Most of you.
Well, Ryan won't see you because he wasn't there when we did the next episode.
Yeah.
So Jill and I will see you next week.
Yeah.
I won't. You have to see me at Red Hat Summit. And I may have a black eye because if Wendy shows up, she'll punch me for all the crap I've said on this episode, which I'm regretting now that the show's over.
I'm actually like really
really regretting my big mouth now that the show's over. Like it felt good at the moment, but now I'm realizing.
Now that you realize that she is the editor and can do whatever she wants, you're like, uh-oh, this is not a good idea.
You gotta be nice to Wendy.